last week we looked at the first part of the second paragraph of the covenant, which talks about walking together in Christian love. And to continue that thought of walking together, which of course is a pledge to unity, we looked last week at what unity means, being one heart, one soul, and one mind, and so forth. We see the Bible tells us that unity is good and pleasant. We see that it's good for us. That is, it's good for the welfare of the church. It's edifying. People are edified and uplifted where there's a spirit of unity, and the spirit of unity, of course, promotes fellowship and joy. If we turn to the book of Ephesians, chapter 4, Paul wrote to the church of Corinth in 1 Corinthians 1 and verse 10 that there should be no divisions among you. In verse 11 of that same chapter, he said that there be no contentions among you. 1 Corinthians 12:25, that there be no schisms or divisions in the body. And he writes here to the church of Ephesus in verse 3. He says, endeavoring to... Well, let's read verse 2, because verse 2 is necessary in order to fulfill verse 3. With all lowliness and meekness, with long-suffering, forbearing one another in love, endeavoring to keep the unity of the Spirit in the bond of peace. You see here we're to endeavor to keep, to guard unity, implying here that there was unity in the church of Ephesus and they were to guard it. And when a church has unity, it's the responsibility of each member to keep it. It's the responsibility of each one to guard that unity. Now, we must say at the same time that unity is not at all cost. You have to have a basis for unity, and our basis for unity, of course, is the truth. If you have a portion of the church that is in error and they are promoting that error, those individuals need to be dealt with for the sake of unity. So sometimes you have to contend in order to have unity. So again, it's not unity at any cost, and we'll get to that later. But where unity exists, we must guard it. So we want tonight to look at ways in order to keep unity of the Spirit, in order to guard unity of the Spirit. There's certain things that have to be done. If we turn over to the book of Philippians, chapter 2, verse 3. Philippians 2, verse 3. And again, we're going to look at a lot of verses tonight. Most of them will be in the book of Proverbs. But in Philippians 2 and verse 3, we see in verse 2, we talked about being of one accord, of one mind, which of course is unity. With that in mind, he says, let nothing be done through strife or vainglory, but in lowliness of mind let each esteem other better than themselves. Let nothing be done through strife. So in order to keep unity, we must make sure that we as individuals do nothing through strife. Now, strife is of the flesh. 1 Corinthians 3, verse 3 talks about it being of the flesh. Galatians 5, verse 20, we see that it is a fruit or a product of the flesh. And what strife is simply contention. And according to Proverbs, many times, it's something that is often stirred up. There are many things that stir up strife. Now, to stir up simply means to excite or to incite the feelings of strife. So we're not to do that which would excite the feelings of strife or incite the feelings of strife. So in order to have unity, there must be the avoidance of having our actions controlled by strife. And there are individuals who have their actions, their mind, controlled by a contentious spirit, by a spirit of strife. So if we're to avoid this, there has to be the avoidance of those things that stir up strife. And again, we can only take care of ourselves, and that's our responsibility, is to take care of ourselves to make sure that we do not stir up strife. Now, notice in the book of Proverbs, chapter 10, again, we'll read several verses in Proverbs, but in Proverbs chapter 10 and verse 12, we see one of the things that stirs up strife. Hatred stirreth up strifes, but love covereth all sins. Hatred stirs up strife. Someone will say, well, you're not going to find hatred in the Lord's churches. I wish it were so. But I have seen a spirit of hatred in the Lord's churches. And hatred stirs up strife. What is hatred? Hatred is basically ill will toward another. That's hatred. If you wish ill towards someone else, that's hate. You can call it what you want, but that's hatred. So hatred is ill will toward others. So we have to make sure that we do not develop a spirit of hatred, that we do not have hatred within us. Another thing that stirs up strife is wrath. Notice in Proverbs chapter 15, Proverbs 15 and verse 18, a wrathful man stirreth up strife. He that is slow to anger appeaseth strife. So in the context here, we see wrath has to do with anger. And really, wrath is simply the display of anger. And we see that a wrathful man, that is one who is given over to the display of anger, he is an individual that stirs up strife. Notice in Proverbs chapter 30 and verse 33, again we read of this wrath. Surely the churning of milk bringeth forth butter, and the wringing of the nose bringeth forth blood. So the forcing of wrath bringeth forth strife. So we have hatred, we have wrath. Wrath is connected with anger, which we'll look at in a little bit, and it is the display of excessive anger. Another thing that stirs up strife is grievous words. Notice in Proverbs chapter 15 and verse 1, a soft answer turneth away wrath, but grievous words stir up anger. And as we'll see in a little bit, anger stirs up strife. But grievous words stir up anger. So what are grievous words? Well, the word grieve, of course, or grievous, implies that which is painful, that which is hurtful. So painful and hurtful words stir up strife, stir up contention. So if we are to endeavor to keep the unity of the Spirit, we have to guard our tongues. We have to guard our mouths. We have to make sure that we do not speak words that are painful and hurtful, and certainly that we do not intentionally cause anyone hurt with our words. So grievous words stir up strife. Now, I believe there's a lot of things that fall under the heading of grievous words. A lot of things. And Proverbs has much to say about the tongue and the use of words. Notice in Proverbs chapter 11, Proverbs 11, we see one of the things that would be included in grievous words would be talebearing. We see in verse 13 of Proverbs 11, a talebearer revealeth secrets. A talebearer revealeth secrets. And he does so intentionally, and he does so with a purpose. And a talebearer is one who desires to hurt and to cause others, and that's why he reveals what he knows in or what he thinks he may know. In Proverbs chapter 17 and verse 9, we read, "He that covereth a transgression seeketh love, but he that repeateth a matter separateth very friends." Now, sometimes perhaps a matter needs to be repeated, but again, that's a different subject. But this is referring to the talebearer, and he purposely repeats matters, and he does so with the intent of separating friends. And of course, this would fall under the heading of grievous words. In Proverbs 18 and verse 8, the words of a talebearer are his wounds. That makes it grievous words. And they go down into the innermost parts of the belly. So we see that the words of a talebearer are as wounds. They are grievous words. In Proverbs chapter 20 and verse 19, "He that goeth about as a talebearer," again, that shows intent, it shows purpose. He goes about as a talebearer, "revealeth secrets. Therefore, meddle not with him that flattereth with his lips." And then notice in Proverbs chapter 26 and verse 20, "Where no wood is, there the fire goeth out. So where there is no talebearer, the strife ceaseth." And I've seen it happen. I've seen individuals get things right between themselves, and then a talebearer come on the scene and undo everything. And those are grievous words, and that person, of course, is divisive. That individual is divisive, and as long as that kind of conduct is tolerated, a church will never have a spirit of unity, and if they do not have a spirit of unity, they'll never amount to what God would have them amount to. Another thing that falls under the heading of talebearing, which falls under the heading of grievous words, would be evil whispering. Evil whispering. Notice Proverbs chapter 16 and verse 28. Proverbs 16, verse 28. "A froward man soweth strife, and a whisperer separateth chief friends." A whisper. Did you hear about so-and-so? Did you hear about what they did? That's a whisper. And they separate chief friends. Proverbs 26, verse 22. The words of a talebearer, again, we've already read this, are his wounds. They are his wounds. Again, a talebearer and a whisper, one and the same. Another form of grievous words would be slander, which is simply telling something that's just not true. It's not true. In Proverbs chapter 10 and verse 18, Proverbs 10, verse 18, "He that hideth hatred with lying lips, and he that uttereth a slander is a fool." And again, that individual, when an individual utters a slander, that's grievous words. Those are painful words. Those are hurtful words. There are hasty words. That is when we speak without thinking. That's when many times our words become grievous. Notice in Proverbs chapter 29 and verse 20. "Seest thou a man that is hasty in his words?" That is, he or she is quick to speak. "There is more hope of a fool than of him." Again, this individual is going to be guilty of grievous words. And again, if there's going to be unity, we have to overcome grievous words, because grievous words stir up anger, and anger stirs up strife. There are those who use malicious words, and John talked of such there in 3 John verse 10, prating against us with malicious words. So part of endeavoring to keep the unity of the Spirit is guarding the tongue. It's also making sure that we speak right words. All these others that we've just mentioned are wrong. We have to be careful that we speak right words. Notice in the book of Job chapter 6, Job chapter 6 and verse 25, Job 6, verse 25. This is Job speaking, and he says, "How forcible are right words, but what doth your arguing reprove?" How forcible, how powerful are right words. And again, where there is unity, there are people who speak right words. Not only right words, but appropriate words. Notice in Proverbs 25, verse 11. Proverbs chapter 25 and verse 11. "A word fitly spoken, properly spoken, is like apples of gold and pictures of silver." That is, it's a beautiful thing. Words fitly spoken. Now, words fitly spoken, they have to be the right words. They have to be spoken in the right manner. And they have to be spoken at the right time. You can say the right thing the wrong way. You can say the right thing in a right way at the wrong time. So all three of those have to be there. There has to be right words, it has to be in a right manner, and it has to be at the right time. And those are appropriate words. And those are the words that help us to have a spirit of unity. So grievous words stir up anger. Anger stirs up strife. Notice in Proverbs 29, verse 22. "An angry man stirreth up strife." It does not say an angry man is likely to stir up strife. That's not what it says. It says an angry man stirreth up strife. He's going to. "And a furious man," which is just another degree of anger, "aboundeth in transgression." So anger. Anger is a very strong feeling, a very strong, very powerful emotion. It is a feeling of annoyance. And if you let something annoy you long enough, eventually you will display that anger. It's going to come out eventually. And that's why we have to take care of the inward anger. It's a strong feeling of displeasure, strong feeling of hostility. And the Bible gives us plenty of warning. It tells us to be slow to anger. Book of Proverbs, in Proverbs 15:18 and Proverbs 16:32, both of those verses tell us to be slow to anger. And that will solve many problems. That'll solve many problems for ourselves, and that will solve many problems for those that we deal with. Anger in and of itself is not sinful. The Bible tells us in Ephesians 4 and verse 26, "Be ye angry and sin not." So he does make a distinction between being angry and sinning. So we can be angry, but you have to be very careful, because there's a very fine line between anger and sin. And if we hold on to anger, it's not going to be a good thing. Again, emotions, including the emotion of anger, becomes destructive, becomes hurtful, when it is not expressed in harmony with the Word of God. That's when it becomes sinful. If you can express anger in harmony with the principles of God's Word, be ye angry. But as soon as we begin to express that anger contrary to what God tells us in His Word, now it's become sinful. So, anger that is not expressed properly is destructive. It's destructive. How many marriages, how many relationships have been ruined simply because anger is not expressed properly? Now, I believe that anger needs to be expressed, but that it has to be expressed properly. It's better to express it than it is to hold it in and just continue to dwell on it, because if you do that, you're going to express it, and it's not going to be properly. So if it's not properly expressed, it's going to be destructive either to ourselves or to someone else. Anger is sinful and destructive when it's released without control. You can be sure that when anger is released without control, it's destructive. It's always destructive. It's never helpful. It's never a good thing when anger is released without control. You can apply that to every single emotion that a human being has. Any emotion, I don't care if whatever it is, any emotion that is not under control is going to become sinful. It's going to become wrong, and perhaps more so with anger than any other. And Proverbs has much to say about being quick to anger and expressing anger without control. Notice in Proverbs chapter 14, I mean, I've been in business meetings where a man's veins are popping out of his neck and he's telling somebody how he loves them. I'm sorry, I don't believe it. I mean, it's anger out of control. In Proverbs 14 and verse 17, he that is soon angry, that's quick to anger, and anyone who's quick to anger doesn't have control. He that is soon angry dealeth foolishly. Dealeth foolishly. And he's going to cause problems. In verse 29, he that is slow to wrath is of great understanding. But he that is hasty of spirit exalteth folly or foolishness, which is going to be destructive. In Proverbs chapter 19, in verse 11, the discretion of a man, that's wisdom, deferreth his anger. The discretion of a man deferreth his anger. Again, when we get angry, it's good to just stop and think this thing through. Think it through. And the discretion of a man deferreth his anger. And it is his glory to pass over a transgression. And when that is done, when you have, because whenever you have people, I don't care, whenever you have two people, there are going to be disagreements. There are going to be differences of opinion. There's going to be anger. But it's the individuals that know how to control anger, how to deal with anger, they can live with their differences. And they can get along and they can have unity. And that's how it has to be in a church. And you take a church when you have many people, you're going to have various opinions on various matters. You're going to have people looking at things in different ways. And again, the key for endeavoring to keep unity is to keep anger in check. To keep it in check and to keep it in control. Notice in Proverbs 25, verse 28, he that hath no rule over his own spirit, that's self-discipline. He that hath no rule over his own spirit, in other words, he that does not have self-discipline is like a city that is broken down and without walls. He's in trouble. We have to have self-discipline. And that's self-discipline goes a long way in creating a spirit of unity. In Proverbs chapter 29, Proverbs 29, verse 11, a fool uttereth all his mind, but a wise man keepeth it in till afterwards. A fool just tells you what he's thinking all the time. Going to give you a piece of their mind. The problem is they don't have anything left after they've given a piece of their mind. A fool is going to utter all his mind, but a wise man will keep it in until afterwards. In other words, a wise man's going to think about it. A wise man is going to be slow to anger. So anger becomes destructive when it's released without control. It also becomes sinful and destructive when it's repressed, when it is turned inward. And it seems to me that's what Paul is talking about there in Ephesians 4 and verse 26. He says, let not the sun go down upon your wrath. Be angry and sin not, let not the sun go down upon your wrath. What he's talking about is repressing anger. That is, you need to get rid of grudges daily. That doesn't mean that you necessarily have to go to the individual that you're angry with. It simply means you have to deal with it. And you have to make sure that that thing does not become a ruling principle in your thoughts and a ruling principle in your life. And he goes on in Ephesians 4:27 in the same, in the context, again, let not the sun go down upon your wrath. And he goes on in verse 27, he says, do not give place to the devil. You give place to the devil when you let the sun go down on your wrath. When you repress anger and that becomes a ruling principle in your life, it begins to dominate your thinking, dominate the way you look at things, and anger will cloud your mind. Anger will blur your vision. And when that happens, you're giving place to the devil. And the devil, there's nothing he likes more than to tear up the Lord's church. There's nothing he likes more to cause division and to cause strife and to cause contention in the Lord's church. So, again, if you just hold on to that anger and you just think about it, and there's people that's done that for years. They just hold on to it. And they can hardly be civil to another person because they've got all this anger built up within them. And when that takes place, I don't care if you agree in a business meeting, if you have built up anger within your heart toward another individual, that breaks unity. That breaks unity. There is not a spirit of unity. And eventually, of course, that's going to manifest itself. And again, this repressed anger goes right along with bitterness, Hebrews 13, verse 15. And in James 5 and verse 9, James wrote grudge. That is, grudge means malice or resentment. Grudge not against one another. That is, do not hold malice in your heart toward one another. Do not hold resentment in your heart toward one another. You say, well, I just don't talk to them for the sake of unity. You don't understand what unity is. If you have resentment and malice in your heart, don't you see that there is no unity? You can go through the motions of pretending that it's there, but as long as there's malice and resentment, it's not there. It doesn't exist. So we have to take care of that malice. We have to take care of that resentment. And again, that doesn't mean you go off and just let somebody know how you feel. It means that you have to deal with your own heart. Because much of our anger and resentment that we have toward others is unjustified. We've justified it in our minds, but if we're honest with ourselves, we should have got over it. And so, again, these things are necessary for spirit of unity. Another thing that will destroy unity is a failure to leave off contention. There is a failure to just leave off contention. Notice in Proverbs chapter 17, Proverbs 17, verse 14. And this is something that husbands and wives would be good to learn. Proverbs 17, 14, the beginning of strife. And again, all strife has a beginning. It had to start somewhere. It all has a beginning. The beginning of strife is as when one letteth out water. Therefore, leave off contention. If you can leave it alone, leave it alone. Now, sometimes it can't be left alone. I understand that. Leave off contention before it be meddled with. Now, in order to leave off contention, we have to avoid those things that lead to contention. Again, we're not talking about unity at any cost. We're talking about unity around the truth. If someone begins to promote error within the church for the sake of unity, that has to be dealt with. If someone's in sin and that sin is threatening to destroy the church, that has to be dealt with for the sake of unity. Sometimes you have to divide and so you can become one. There are many churches. They're never going to be in unity until some people leave. I mean, that's just a fact. It's not going to happen until those individuals are dealt with. And when a church gets in that position, those individuals need to be dealt with for the sake of unity. So leaving off contention, of course, is not just a blanket statement. There are limitations. But a failure to leave off contention will destroy unity. And to leave off pride is something that causes contention. Notice in Proverbs 13, verse 10, only by pride cometh contention, but with the well-advised is wisdom. Only by pride cometh contention. Pride seeks to contend. I'm right, you're wrong, and you're going to see it my way before we leave. I mean, that's pride. And pride causes contention. A hasty spirit, as we've already seen, causes contention. A lack of discretion, something else we've already seen, causes contention. So if we're going to leave off contention, we have to leave off pride, we have to leave off a hasty spirit, we have to leave off that foolishness or a lack of discretion. A contentious spirit certainly causes contention. Notice in Proverbs 26, verse 21, and again, we've already read this. As coals are to burning coals and wood to fire, so is a contentious man to kindle strife. Now, what is a contentious man? A contentious man is someone who has a spirit of disagreement. That is, you say the sky is blue, they're going to argue with you. They just have a spirit of disagreement. That is a contentious spirit. And a contentious spirit will always destroy unity. It is a spirit of disagreement. It is a spirit of battle. No matter what position you take, no matter where you stand, they have a spirit where they are going to battle with you. That is a contentious spirit. And a contentious spirit is an enemy to unity. It will always destroy unity. It's the same with the contentious spirit is one and the same with the froward man that we read of in Proverbs 16 and verse 28. And again, it's just simply a spirit that is counterproductive to unity. So if we're going to have unity, we have to let nothing be done through strife. Philippians 2 verse 3 also says that let nothing be done through vain glory. Where there is vain glory, there cannot possibly be unity. Where there is vain glory, there is always going to be contention. What is vain glory? He says, let nothing be done. Talking to the church of Philippi. Let nothing be done through vain glory. It is a desire for personal honor. A desire for personal honor. These are the people who are always getting their feelings hurt. These are the people who are always offended. Because it's about them. That's vain glory. That is always going to be counterproductive to unity. It is the desire for attention. It is the desire for praise. It is the desire for preeminence. It is the desire to make self the main object. But if a church is going to enjoy the spirit of unity, then it is imperative that each and every member avoid the desire for vainglory. And the Bible, of course, has much to say about vainglory. And we're not going to read those verses to save time, but there's many warnings concerning vainglory. We read of Demetrius in 3 John verse 9, was a man who desired the preeminence among them. And he caused problems in the church because he desired the preeminence. And wherever you have individuals that want the preeminence, you're going to have a problem. You're going to have a problem with unity. And Christ serves as an example of rising above vainglory. He said in John 5, verse 30, I seek not mine will, but the will of him that sent me. You see, that's just the opposite of vainglory. I seek not my will. In John 5, verse 41, I receive not glory from men. In John 6, and verse 38, I'm not come to do mine own will. In John 8 and verse 50, I seek not mine own glory. And if you have a whole church that does that, you won't have a problem. But it only takes one individual. It only takes one individual to do everything through vainglory. If they clean the building, if they cook a meal, or whatever they do, they want to be thanked. That's vainglory. That's vainglory. And if they don't get thanked and they don't get the proper praise, if they don't get the proper recognition, well, see if I do it next time. Don't. Because you're doing it for the wrong reason. So vainglory is destructive to unity. He goes on in Philippians chapter 2, if we turn over there, we're not to do anything through strife. We're not to do anything through vainglory. And the remedy for that in verse 3, but in lowliness of mind, that's humility, let each esteem other better than themselves, more worthy than themselves. Let each esteem others better than themselves. That will take care of a lot of problems. That spirit of humility will take care of many, many problems. In order to keep the spirit of unity, there also must be a putting others ahead of ourselves. Notice verse 4, he says, look not every man on his own things, but every man also on the things of others. That is, do not be so self-involved that you cannot see others. That's destructive to unity. And then, of course, in order to keep unity, you have to have wisdom from above. And this is what James talks about in chapter 3, verses 13 through 18. Heavenly wisdom promotes unity amongst the saints of God, amongst those in that make up the body of Christ. And then lastly, if we turn to Romans chapter 16, in order to keep the spirit of unity, there must be a marking of those who cause division. There has to be. You have to deal with individuals that cause division. You have to deal with the contentious individuals. spirit. You do so for the sake of the body. You do so for the sake of unity within that body. Again, sometimes the best thing that can happen to one of the Lord's churches is split. That's true. In order for that church to ever be right, a split may be necessary. I've had pastors say, oh, I'm scared of doing such and such because it may cause a split. Well, that may not be such a bad thing. I mean, certainly any pastor needs to really weigh that matter. But it's not always a bad thing. Sometimes it's the best thing. But Romans 16, verse 17 and 18, now I beseech you, brethren, mark them which cause divisions and offenses, and notice the basis for unity, contrary to the doctrine which we have learned. The basis of unity is the truth. Mark them which cause divisions and offenses contrary to the truth, and avoid them. That is, you do not encourage them. You do not encourage them in any way to be divisive. And the best way to encourage them many times is simply listen to them. You listen to them, you give them an open forum, and to badmouth everybody in the church, that's not what this verse is talking about. We're to avoid them. To avoid them. For they that are such serve not our Lord Jesus Christ. That's pretty plain. This isn't a judgment that we make. This is what the Spirit of God tells us. They serve not the Lord Jesus Christ, but their own belly. That is, they're in it for themselves. And by good words and fair speeches, this is why you'd avoid them. You can't give them a platform. By good words and fair speeches, deceive the hearts of the simple. So when we were added to Home Baptist Church, we made a pledge to walk in unity. We made a pledge to walk together. That's an awesome responsibility. It's an awesome responsibility that each and every individual has to make sure that we endeavor to guard the unity of a church. And the best way to do that is we have to take care of our own hearts. We have to make sure that we do not harbor ill feelings toward church members. I don't care how justified you think you are. We have to take care of our own spiritual well-being so that we do not harbor these feelings. And again, as we said last week, this includes husbands and wives that are members of the same church. Somehow people have gotten the idea, well, we're husband and wife, we don't have to like each other, we can fight all the time and still have unity in the church. No, you can't. So husbands and wives have to get right. They have to get right with one another. They have to for the sake of unity in the church. If you can't do it for any other reason, and certainly you ought to be able to, but if you can't do it for any other reason, it ought to be so that there can be unity in the church, husbands and wives. So again, don't think that you can treat your spouse like you wouldn't treat any other church member. You wouldn't dream of saying to them what you say to others and treat them the way you do. And think that that's an exception, because it's not. Because you're members of the same body. So we need to keep these things in mind. When we made a pledge to walk together in Christian love, we're also making a pledge concerning our home, concerning our marital relationship. We've made a pledge that we're going to keep that in unity as well. So God help us to walk together in unity. Ben, if you'd come and lead us.